bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a pig. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Well, hello out there, everyone. It's Thursday afternoon. So this is another installment of In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. And we want to thank the Flower Farm. There's no snow on Petersburg Mountain. And that's your sure sign that it's time to plant. And they've got vegetable starts ready to go out at the Flower Farm and Garden Center. Everything you want, probably. Zucchini, patty squash, red and white cabbage, peas, kale, and lots more. At the Flower Farm, they're open every day, 10 to 4, except Wednesdays. And they're at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. And then downtown in Petersburg, you've got the Garden Center, right there behind Love and Matters on Main Street. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5.
This life I lead. Well, I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me.
And a reminder that this is a call-in show. So if you've got a question for the one and only Master Gardener Ed Bajarski, do feel free. 772-3808 is the number here. And I think we've got Master Gardener Ed Bajarski on the line. I think he's in a shady spot. They've got sunshine up there in the Juneau area too, just like we've got here, and I'm sure everybody is out there working hard in their gardens. Ed, have we got you on the line?
It is indeed, yes.
All right.
Great weather. People are either, I hate to say either, yeah, some people are working in the garden, the more fortunate of us. You know, I feel sad for the people who are working in the offices and looking out, if they're so lucky as to have a window to look out at it. Thank God, I wish I was out there.
yeah. Well, I guess there's all kinds of work that have to get done, but it is a beautiful day in the area.
It is, yeah. The last couple of days I've been working, among other places, at home and getting in peas and carrots, lettuce and Swiss chard, beets, and more.
Mm.
So it's great time. Things are finally warming up. My tomatoes are going into the greenhouse tonight, at least to start hardening off,
Before
they get planted too. And then cucumbers and zucchinis to follow. So it's looking up. The weather's supposed to change, of course, as it always does around here.
Yeah.
But we're taking advantage of it. My greenhouse range has been from 36 to 102 this week.
Wow.
So a little extreme. But I've also been looking at, I've been digging in mulch, weeding, pulling plants out of mulch, thinking about mulching, and getting ready to spread some mulch of various and sundry different sorts. So I figured it's a good subject to talk about, and, you know, where and why we mulch and what we should use.
That sounds great. Yeah, let's talk mulch. There's mulch to talk about.
A lot of folks may start out, well, I guess the most common one, or maybe a combination of mulches. Very often folks will use a landscaping fabric and bark, whether it be bark mulch or bark chips, chunks, or whatever. That's common, goes down quickly, and the purpose of it is usually, well, two purposes usually. One may be to stop the weeds with the landscaping fabric, and the other is you put the beauty bark on top to make it look beautiful, of course. And there's pros and cons of that. Using the bark on top of fabric works short term. Unfortunately, of course, the bark does break down. 2 or 3 years later, usually you have to fluff it up, loosen it up, or you may have to add more, because it does break down and potentially could, if it didn't have that plastic layer in between, it could actually improve the soil underneath.
So you're
depending
like
on
what,
where
the
we're
weeds.
Using it, yeah. Maybe that's okay. The other thing that happens as that bark mulch breaks down on top of the plastic is that other stuff will grow into it. you'll get seeds of alders, spruces, cottonwoods, dandelions, buttercups, whatever, that blow in on the breeze or however they get tracked in, and they start to grow. And depending on what kind of material you have underneath there, they may come out easily, which is the plus. You know, they're not rooted into the soil underneath. But if you have a loose weave woven or some of the kind of thin, lightweight, non-woven plastic mulches, then they will root themselves into that fabric. And that becomes more of a chore to deal with. So I've at least gotten to, and we've talked before about using cardboard instead of, as the barrier, cardboard first on the ground, which will stop grass and buttercups and dandelions. It will not stop horsetail. But anyway, and then putting the bark mulch on top of it, the cardboard normally only lasts about a year or a little bit more than that, and it breaks down, and then that means the bark mulch that's there can break down also. And particularly around shrubbery, that's a good thing, so that then, again, you're adding organic matter to the soil. And that's a good thing, where if you have that plastic layer in between, many of the benefits are lost of having that mulch.
Gotcha. So certain kinds of mulch can have a dual purpose of fighting off weeds for a few years and then sort of coming around and improving the soil in the long run.
Sure. But, you know, you might be using, some folks, I certainly do, may use mulch or use a plastic fabric, a sturdy, some of these heavy, use the heavy-duty woven fabrics. Typar is a brand name, and there's various and sundry different weights of it, how thick it is, how durable it is. And it can be used for in a path, on top of which you might still put wood chips or bark mulch. In the path, you can just kind of scrape the stuff off as it breaks down, even toss it into the beds and add more. Or some folks will put gravel on top of it. And so that's more like a relatively permanent mulch. Again, you will have some just dust and dirt that blows in and old leaves and other stuff too that might show up. As they break down, you still kind of get a layer of soil underneath or among the gravel on top of the fabric, into which, of course, weeds can grow. But again, the gravel, at least, you rake the gravel once a year and call it good enough. And the key thing there, if you're using it for a path, is using the heavy-duty fabric underneath that gravel. So where the lightweight materials that may be just called garden mulch or garden landscape fabric may not hold up under the traffic, and especially if you've got sharp gravel, they can actually wear through that. And then again, you've lost your barrier, that it may be a weed barrier or something like that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are good considerations. Right, so the gravel itself can cut up the fabric.
Yeah. So then there's some of the other mulches we've talked about, again, using, say, in a greenhouse, where we may, and this applies actually in the outdoor vegetable gardens too, where we might actually put plants through some of these different colors of plastic mulch, which have some benefits still stopping weeds, we hope. But there's a green one that's kind of semi-translucent. It allows infrared to pass through it, but not the visible light that helps to stimulate weed growth. It's called IRT, for infrared transmitting. That one kind of helps warm the soil underneath it, but it doesn't, again, let the kind of light that stimulates weed seeds grow. Hmm. Compared to if you use, like I use, well, lots of clear plastic as a wintertime cover for my garden beds, which then can warm up in the spring and, on top of my garlic and other things, then that comes off in the springtime when they want to grow.
Uh-huh. Gotcha.
There's another kind still, we talk about using, I use some of that green IRT in my greenhouses. I'll put it on, layer it, it's on the ground, plant cucumbers through it and zucchini through it. Another advantage of that in the greenhouse is that it keeps the soil moisture in the soil where you want it and not evaporating up into the air thereby keeping your greenhouse drier. So again, you have to, which means you can, you don't have to water as much in the greenhouse for those plants. You can even put something like a soaker hose or similar underneath that plastic that you then, you know, whether you have a timer to turn it on, you know, once every 3 or 4 days or whatever the timing is for your, you know, depending on how hot and dry it is, how fast, how often the plants need to be watered.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Wow, that's cool. So if you're planting, like you're saying, through this infrared transmitting, is it a plastic sheet or is it fabric?
It is, and it's a pretty lightweight material, so you have to treat it carefully. I do reuse it, you know, for a couple of years, 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. But you do, it's much lighter weight. I think it may be 1 mil or 1.5 mil compared to most, say, normal clear plastic or black plastic you might buy as a to cover something like that is usually going to be 4 mil plastic. So it's thick. That is thicker material, may last longer. Part of the challenge with these different kinds of clear plastics, like if you're using for a greenhouse, is that some have, they're treated with different material to resist the ultraviolet rays, which break down the plastic. You know, so you may very well see somebody's using some clear plastic out in the gardens, and eventually after a year or two, sometimes even less than that, depending on how much sun we get, the plastic crumbles.
Right.
If it does not have this UV resistant coating or additive in it.
Uh-huh.
So again, look at what are you using the material for is going to help you decide what to use.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we're using effectively like a mulch. The we've talked about the Rime, the horticultural fabric,
mm-hmm.
that works to keep out the little, like, cabbage root maggots.
Right.
It will hold a few degrees of heat. It lets light through it. It lets moisture and air through it. So, again, it's kind of another mulch. And, of course, seaweed is one of our favorites.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we're using as a mulch, which helps break down, brings the nutrients back from the ocean back to the land to feed our plants, and which hopefully then feed us eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got a good thick layer of seaweed, that will break down. Definitely the worms really like it. The slugs don't usually like it unless it's well watered, well washed eventually.
Oh.
Too.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's an extra bonus effect of using the seaweed.
And maybe a reason not to rinse it super duper well is to, like, keep it a little salty.
Right. Yeah, you don't need, yeah. Again, normally, if we're using it in an outdoor garden, I don't recommend, no need to rinse it. It's if gardeners are using it in a greenhouse situation, on their beds, or even mixing it into soil, that's a place where rinsing it may be good because we don't get as much rain leaching happening in a greenhouse, so you can have a salt buildup, which can eventually become toxic to plants, cause them not to grow very well.
Right. Yep. Hmm. Yeah, that's cool. There's a lot to think about with mulch.
And there, boy, you start looking up mulches, and there's some exotic mulch. There's some things. There's cocoa hulls from processing for chocolate. The hulls which are covering the beans. There are, down south, especially in Oregon, where they grow lots of hazelnuts, filberts, you can buy bags of the hazelnut shells used as a mulch, which looks really nice.
Yeah.
It's quite durable. You would not want to walk on this stuff barefoot. Trust me, it's very sharp, crunchy stuff. But still, it makes a nice path and is slower to break down than something like bark, by comparison. And, you know, the other thing is, if you in your neighborhood, certainly I am lucky enough on occasion to catch the guys who are doing tree trimming underneath power lines, and they're chipping all the stuff. Mm-hmm. I'll get that to use as mulch, as on paths or in the garden or in, around shrubbery. And that works really well. And normally, especially at spruces and hemlocks primarily, that's very beneficial for things like rhododendrons and azaleas and other evergreens too.
Oh, that makes sense. Kind of they've got the same sort of body chemistry, kind of.
It is. Well, it's a pH issue. It's acidic, and that is what the rhododendrons and most evergreens want. Mm-hmm. So using the spruce and hemlock, chips or bark, or even needles. You know, sometimes if you get a lot of needles, may fill up your gutters, you can use that and gather it up, or even rake it up underneath trees sometimes. A lot of folks will do that. And it works pretty well, too. Again, as a nice, it's permeable, you know, water flows through it, air flows through it. It's light, fairly, relatively lightweight, too, if you can get some quantities of it.
Hmm. Nice. I like it. So there's a lot of different ways to reuse and kind of make use of debris that you're kind of finding. Your gutters or chipped exactly. Trimmings.
One thing I do not recommend, and you may see it, I don't know how prevalent it is there, but we've got our big box stores here in Juneau, and rubber mulch, which are chipped up tires, are offered as something you can use. Certainly, it's a great material to use in a playground, underneath swing set, underneath playground equipment, and that sort of thing. But it is not something you want to use in a garden. It doesn't break down. So there's no real benefits. You know, they've got multiple colors. There's black and brown and red rubber mulch. Mm-hmm. And again, they used it on several playgrounds here. The one concern, well, a couple concerns actually with using that even on playgrounds is sometimes some tires have wires in them, mm-hmm. the belted tires, not just fiberglass or other types of fibers in them.
Yeah.
It's very flammable. I mean, bark mulch by itself, if it dries out, is kind of flammable, but rubber mulch is really, really flammable. So that's an item of concern to be careful of. But it feels really nice, you know, if you fall on it or jump on it or whatever for kids, assuming it's good and clean stuff.
Yeah, interesting. Right, I'm kind of remembering that being a factor in that fire in Juneau this past year.
Yes, exactly, right. And they're getting ready to rebuild the playground. But, yeah, they used that in there, and some kids dumped some gas or oil or something on the edge of the fence, and once it took hold, got into that rubber mulch and all, it was an amazing, incredible blaze.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so that's
a consideration
to think about.
Yeah,
you know, what you're using, and again, In that situation, using gravel, it's less fun to fall on, but it is durable and it's not flammable.
Yeah.
So I mean, we'll give somewhat. You can use sand. You know, although sand is fun to play with, at least. Although it will, you know, gets into in a playground, certainly gets into the shoes and the pockets and the whatever else too. But I'll use sand sometimes too if I've got a garden box.
Yeah.
And that has really high organic matter in it that, say, if I got, you know, I got lots of muskeg and peat for building new boxes, and I plant something in there, well, I'll sometimes, particularly for garlic, but other stuff too, actually put a little layer, like a half-inch layer of sand on top of the soil after I get stuff planted, or you can plant through it. And then as I harvest stuff out of it, then that sand gets mixed into the muskeg or the organic matter, again, to help balance out and to improve the drainage in the long run. But again, in the short run, it stops weeds. It can inhibit slugs. They don't really like crawling across sand either. So again, there's lots, you know, there's all sorts of grass clippings can be used as a mulch. You can use it in moderation around plants because it can be rich and rather hot, or it can be used in a heavy layer if you want to kill off some weeds. You get a 2 or 3 inch layer of mown grass and it will smother most anything underneath it.
Huh.
So again, it doesn't really breathe. You know, once it gets wet and it gets slimy and nasty, it'll kill off grass and buttercups and dandelions underneath it.
Yeah. Huh. Grass, yeah. I'm still reeling from that idea of using mulch on top or sand on top of your beds as a mulch, and then as you harvest out, it drains in. I mean, my gosh,
beautiful. And that applies to whether you want a layer of compost. If you've got lots of compost, or even if you're buying bags of compost, again, that can be used as a mulch, as a weed barrier. Hopefully. hopefully it was well composted so that it doesn't have much weeds in it left. Certainly I use my horse manure, same thing, it's been composted, but there are definitely weeds grow out of it. So I've got to be careful. But still, the rain or your watering leaches nutrients out of it, and it's organic matter there, which can be mixed into the soil. So again, depending if you've got rather sandy soil, you add organic stuff as a mulch.
Right.
Sometimes just straight, you buy bales of peat, you know, the harvested stuff that's all ground up and dried and baled up. That can be used as a mulch. And again, to add organic matter in the long run, it's good for those rhododendrons and other acid-loving plants, shrubs, trees, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no lack of things to use for mulch.
Right.
And even I've seen some folks where in a place where there are lots of kind of small flat rocks. Again, using flat rocks as a mulch for a cup, again, partly to stop weeds, but the rocks, especially if they're dark-colored rocks, will also help, well, warm up in the sun, and then again, help hold warmth there overnight.
Mm. Yeah, makes sense.
Of course, it gets, you know, you go from sand to gravel to rocks for mulch, it gets heavier and heavier and heavier. So,
so
if you're hauling it or you have some teenager who you can pay to haul this stuff, I vote for that.
Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, the big takeaway for me is there are many, many different ways to mulch, and it's just goes back to what we've talked about a number of times, the art of planning your garden, you know, like thinking about what does this soil want to be blended into it? What do I want to accomplish with this mulch? Is it just weed prevention right now and forever, or am I trying to improve this soil at the same time? So just kind of making your choices with mulch based on what your plan is for the garden.
And thinking about what it will do later.
Yeah,
so
right.
Some folks will like put straw. They'll buy bales of straw in the fall to mulch some of their plants to slow the freeze-thaw action. Straw is lovely stuff. It's very expensive in Southeast Alaska, unfortunately. And it's also, slugs really love straw, unfortunately. But you think about, well, there's a plant we cherish and enjoy, strawberries, and part of the reason they got their name is because they're often mulched with straw to help keep them separate them from the soil, keep the weeds down, and it keeps the berries cleaner. So again, there's just one more kind of different mulch used for a different purpose. And you know, I was talking about last week when I was planting my cabbages and cauliflower about using hair as I hope to be a barrier against the root maggots and slugs. But I suppose if you covered the bed with it, I'm going to try to pick up some more today on my way home. Again, it's a different kind of a mulch that slowly breaks down and releases a little bit of nutrients in the process, as well as being pest control and all sorts of different stuff.
That is interesting. I'm still reeling again. That's the second mind-blowing thing, the straw mulch for strawberries. Get out of here, mind blown. Oh, that's fun. Hey,
you happen to be driving down south, like in southern BC, Washington, Oregon, and you drive past some blueberry fields, there you will see probably mountains, big piles of sawdust. And that's what they are using to mulch their berry bushes, again, to keep weeds down. But again, that sawdust is coming from firs and spruce and hemlocks and such. And again, it's acidic, which again is what the blueberries like.
Wow.
So again, multiple purpose. Gradually it breaks down. They probably have to add, they may have to add just a little bit of extra nitrogen to help break it down. But again, it keeps the fields clean, and whether the workers or the U-pick operation, you know, it's nicer than walking in the mud and the dirt also.
Sure. And is it good for just, you lay that down in the fall, by the spring it's pretty much broken down?
Well, usually it's only the layer that's in contact with the soil. You know, the upper layer, again, how thick the layer is that you put on makes a difference. And again, I don't know enough about the timing, if they mostly save it to add the stuff in the springtime. Some of these places, they've got a, like a, they have spread, you know, sawdust spreaders. They drive down the rows, and the ones I've kind of seen are, they kind of almost spray it out, or I don't know if it's like a white, like one of some of these fertilizer spreaders you may have seen.
Yeah.
Or bird type spreaders that throw it out around the plants and stuff. There's in other areas in the southeast of the U.S., they use pine straw. Literally, pine needles are collected in pine plantations, and that stuff is sold as a mulch.
Huh. Yeah, that would be acidic too.
Right.
Huh. Well, that's so darn interesting, I tell you. I have a question here that was called in a day or two ago, and they wanted me to put it to you.
Okay.
And that is, if we can kind of call that the conversation on mulch, and we'll shift gears here to this question if you're ready. All right. This is a question about rhubarb. This caller had hoped to improve her rhubarb the fall before last. So she dug it up and kind of replaced and improved and freshened the soil and kind of broke up some of the pieces, replanted it. It grew pretty well last year, but it was a somewhat smaller crop than she'd expected. And then this year, as soon as it got kind of sunny and dry, like basically the last week or two, it seems like she describes basically her whole rhubarb crop bolted to seed. And she's wondering what happened? Why did this happen? And did she do something that caused that? And what can she do?
It's unlikely there was something she did. It's more likely the amount of light that we have. That is what stimulates most plants to bolt. And whether that's radishes or spinach, I mean, my spinach that I planted last September and October in my greenhouse is bolting now. If you plant spinach now in the garden, it'll bolt in 2 weeks because of the long daylight hours. Nutrients do make a difference, but it's also plant age. So for the rhubarb, it wants to bolt no matter what. So you just go out there, snap off the seed heads, because most of us aren't trying to grow rhubarb from seed. We don't want more seeds. Mm-hmm. So it's just weight using up energy.
Right.
And so if you remove those, and then you make sure keep your fertility level up, because rhubarb is a heavy feeder. Again, whether you can get away with burying fish scraps underneath or beside the plants, or again, for me, I throw the horse manure on top of it, or if people have rabbits, chickens, whatever, some compost manure is great. But keeping the nutrient levels up. And, yeah, mine too. I have seen rhubarb around here that is already starting to bolt. But, again, we're at 17 hours of day length, so that's normal.
Yeah.
And you cut those tops off. Usually it'll do it one time, and then it'll go back to growing more stems as long as it's got good nutrients there. But if it's low on nutrients, that, too, can be kind of a trigger to the plant it reproduce. So it's going to try to make seeds quickly. And this happens with it's what is the very definition of an annual plant, that they grow fast, flower, and then go to seed, which is why we deadhead our annual plants. If we take those seed pods or dead flowers off them, then it's going to try to flower some more. Again, for a rhubarb, at least, usually it won't flower a second time. I have rarely seen that.
Right. Okay. So the advice for her should be snap off those seed pods, and quite possibly the soil needs improvement or fertility enhancement.
More fertilizer, more good stuff.
Yep. And then she doesn't have to worry otherwise, that because the stems will just return to growing as long as the soil is fertile and those seed pods are snapped off.
Right. And we're lucky enough here, at least in southeast Alaska, where it's cool all summer long, that we can eat our rhubarb. Well, as long as we keep feeding it, it keeps growing, we can keep picking some. Where in places down south and back east, there the rhubarb gets too strong, too high in the oxalic acid, even in the stems, which is what we eat, as to become pretty much non-edible and not tasty anyway. But here we have so much rainfall that and cooler temperatures, we can get away with eating our rhubarb as long as it's producing more.
Wow, really? So the rain is like preventing the buildup of acids and things that prevent the edibility of other areas?
Exactly. So, you know, the caution is we don't eat the rhubarb leaves. We just break the leaves off from the stems and we eat those, because the leaves have a higher concentration of the oxalic acid, which is not good for us. So there's still some in the stems, but not so much to be of concern. But again, yeah, down south, that level of oxalic acid builds up with the heat, essentially with summer heat.
Oh, it's a heat-driven acid buildup there?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you can taste the difference, you know, from being nice and succulent in the springtime. Mm-hmm. And it becomes more fibrous, too, under high temperature conditions.
Interesting. Do you know off the top of your head, like, what's a temperature threshold where we start to see kind of a difference?
I don't. That one I cannot answer. I'm sure they grow a lot of rhubarb if you do some reading, probably, or some research. I'm sure that has been studied, what's the temperature by the time it gets, you know, or if you get a certain number of heating degree days, could well be the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Or just like with some other plants and insect emergence and other stuff, too. That you get to a certain point, then you should stop eating the rhubarb, I guess.
Hmm. Yeah, that is a really interesting consideration. Well, and who knows, maybe in the distant future, or not so distant, we'll have hotter temps on a sustained enough basis in the summers around here. That's something we have to be more guarded against. But, yeah, until then.
We could hope we get some consistent high temperatures around here, right? Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Hopefully.
But it doesn't sound like the rhubarb would like it. So whenever I'm thinking, like, this is summer? You call this summer? I'll just look at a rhubarb plant that's happy and edible and just comfort myself that way.
Exactly.
Okay, well, I appreciate your answer to that question, and I'm sure the caller has her question answered. And maybe we'll leave it there. I think we're ready to hand things over to the High Country Show here, so I'll let you get back into the heat of the day down there, and I'm sure there's tons of work to be done, and looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Okay. Yep, I just saw a cloud of dust go by, so it must be.
I've been seeing
it. All it takes is about 2 days of dry weather, and we get dust.
It's true. Well, enjoy the dust then, and we'll catch you next week, Ed.
Okay, bye, Orin.
Thanks so much. Bye. That is In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Byarski, and we'll talk to him again next week. And we want to thank the Flower Farm. They've got vegetable starts ready to go at the Flower Farm and Garden Center. Lots of vegetables and herbs, just about everything you might want there. That's at the Flower Farm at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. They're open every day, 10 till 4, except Wednesday. And they've also got vegetable starts at the Garden Center downtown, behind Love and Matters. They're open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5. All right, and coming up next, we've got High Country Music with Lars Christensen.
Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing the homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What will life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Life I lead,
be Johnny Tomato Seed, 'cause I know.